Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. I hope everybody's having a great day so far, and a lot of stuff to get to. Everything seemed to happen in, I don't know, a period of 24 hours, but there is a lot of stuff to get to, and we're going to do that. So a couple of things. Number one, if you missed the conversation I had with Jeremy Fauser, please go back and take a look at that. He was gracious enough to come on yesterday, and it was a change of pace, I think. And, I mean, we talked about everything from CinemaCon to the summer box office to, yes, we even went into The Flash, of course, no spoilers. We talked a little bit about Barbie. We got a couple stories about that today. Yeah, I mean, we even talked about his little appearance on Wheel of Fortune. So it was a good time, and I thank him greatly for that, and I can't wait to get him back on the show. Occasionally, guys, we're going to be doing interviews like that just to mix it up, just to give you guys an inside perspective on what goes on. He is a guy that has his ear to the ground in Hollywood as far as box office predictions. And we're actually going to be doing one of his stories again today. And look out for his stuff. You know, it is on the Wrap. It is on the Wrap Pro. So you will have to get a subscription to that. But right now there's a sale on it for like 3 months. It's $4.99 a month, I think. I hopped on. Fantastic stuff. Not only by him, but by Scott Mendelson. And yeah, they're fabulous there. Anyways, speaking of Barbie, Barbie is one of those movies that, I gotta say, when I first heard they were making this, I went, huh? They're making a Barbie movie? Really? I mean, look, you want to do IPs, that's fine. And look, Hasbro has done things like Transformers. And we'll talk about that later on in the month of June. And, you know, Transformers and G.I. Joe and everything else. And it's just like, okay, I never thought I would actually get to see the day for a Barbie movie. So we're almost a month away. Okay. It's, I believe, July 16th or the 19th. Nonetheless, it's in the middle of July. And I went, okay. And look, I've been I don't think this movie's going to do well, because I want every movie to do well. You guys know that about me. It was the fact of the release date, and it was the fact that they were, and when I say they, I mean the studio, it was almost like they were completely isolating one whole gender. And look, that's fine. I mean, you have, as you know, Ryan Gosling's in this. We have Will Ferrell. So we have a couple of, you know, big name actors. I had always made the claim that I never knew how well it was going to do. And I even asked Jeremy about this yesterday. I said, you know, we have Oppenheimer, because we were talking about that. And then we have Barbie coming out. And then I said, do you think that the second week of Mission Impossible, because it does come out the week before, could cannibalize some of the revenues? He didn't think so. And I hope he's right, because I want to see this do well. Anyway, so the reason I bring this up is because we got a brand new trailer today. And so trailers are always, and I've said this to you guys again, trailers are always meant to pique your interest. So if the very first trailer is saying, okay, we're coming out with this. The second trailer is to give you a little nugget about the actual film itself. And the third trailer, and that's what dropped today, gave us a larger, broader scope of what this film is going to be. And I got to say, and I never revealed this, I may have revealed it to a couple people, and I had no inside knowledge about it, I was completely dead wrong. I was completely dead wrong what I thought this movie was going to be about. And I got to say, I caught myself chuckling a couple times. The trailer. This looks fun. This looks I'll admit it. I mean, this looks really, really fun. It's one of those things where I think that I'm looking forward to it. I got to be honest. I don't know if I'm going to do a double feature. I will be covering it here on the channel. But I'm definitely going to go see this. So the reason I bring this up to you guys is because there was an article in the THR, the Hollywood Reporter, and Margot Robbie had talked about how she actually got into her character. And she said, quote, she is sexualized, but she should never be sexy. So Margot Robbie used an episode of This American Life and unpacked society's historical sexualization of a doll that doesn't have any reproductive organs to help her getting the character for the upcoming Barbie movie. The film star and producer spoke to Vogue alongside several other members of the Barbie creative team and cast about preparing the kind of iconic Mattel, about preparing to play the iconic Mattel doll. While going behind the scenes of the film's concept to completion, Robbie opened up about how she navigated getting into the character of Barbie. Robbie, who says she really didn't have to think about playing Barbie until years into developing the project. And she points to Gal Gadot, who was unavailable to star in the project at the time, as sort of a human personification of the character. Gal Gadot is Barbie energy, the actress producer said, because Gal Gadot is so impossibly beautiful. But you don't hate for her because she is that beautiful, because she's so genuinely sincere, and she's so enthusiastically kind that it's almost dorky. It's like right before being a dork. The Birds of Prey, an icon and star, would also lean on director and co-writer Greta Gerwig, who helped her navigate to help get her in the mind of the character. I was like, Greta, I need to go on this whole character journey. And Greta was like, oh, I have a really good podcast for you, Robbie recalls. That podcast was an episode of This American Life, who followed a woman who says she didn't have any, quote, any introspective hardly ever, end quote, at all. You know how you have that voice in your head all the time, Robbie explained to the magazine. This woman, she didn't have that voice in her head. While that helped her get into the head of Barbie, getting into the body required a different conversation. Robbie said she had really unpacked how the doll was being culturally sexualized. I'm like, okay, she's a doll. She's a plastic doll. She doesn't have any organs. If she doesn't have any organs, she can't have any reproductive organs. If she doesn't have any reproductive organs, would she ever feel sexual desire? No, I don't think so. I don't think she could, the Barbie star said. She is sexualized, but she should never be sexy. People can project sex onto her. Yes, she can wear a short skirt, but because it's fun and pink, not because she wants you to see her butt. In the Vogue piece, other interesting tidbits about the film's approach were revealed, including Gerwin wrote a super, quote, abstract poem about Barbie, end quote, as part of the film's treatment, with the Oscar-nominated writer-director adding that it, quote, shares some similarities with the Apostles' Creed, end quote. At another point, Gerwin discussed that the order in which Barbie and Ken were created by Mattel, with Ken, quote, invented after Barbie, end quote, has resulted into a sort of creative myth that, quote, that is the opposite of the creation myth in Genesis, end quote. The cast also had a number of exchanges to support each other through the filming of the film. Before they began in London, Gosling, who was unable to attend a slumber party thrown by Gerwin for the film's Barbies, in which Kens were invited, but they couldn't sleep over, sent a special singing telegram instead. According to Vogue, it came in the form of an older Scottish man in a kilt who played bagpipes and delivered the speech from Braveheart. End quote. Robbie had her own gifts for Gosling. She left a pink present with a pink bow from Barbie to Ken every day when we were filming, he said. They were all beach-related, like puka shells or a sign that said, pray for surf, because Ken's job is just beach. I never quite figured out what that means, but I feel like I was trying to help Ken understand those through her gifts that she was giving. Okay, let's talk about it, because I think this is very interesting. Okay, we always talk about how people get into characters and people want, you know, they do the research about characters and everything else. I gotta say, you know, when you look at the cast too, right? I mean, that's the other thing you gotta do about this, is you gotta look at the cast. So we have, you know, obviously Margot Robbie's playing Barbie. We have Ryan Gosling playing Ken. We have Will Ferrell, who is in this as the evil Mattel CEO. We have America Ferrera. We have a couple of other people. I think this is going to be fun. I really, really do. It's one of those things where we never knew too much about it. And obviously, that was made by design. I'm really curious to see this. I got to be honest. I'm really, really curious to see it. And you know what? She did a hell of a job piquing my interest and doing all this stuff. So we'll see where this goes. I'm truly fascinated by this. And it's going to be a big day, too. It's It's going to be a long day because, of course, we have Oppenheimer coming out the same day. You know, so we'll see about that. Anyways, guys, what do you think about this? What did you think about the new Barbie trailer? And what did you think about the, you know, what she was saying about all the things in the article? Are you going to go see Barbie? Are you going to, you know, take somebody you know to go see Barbie? Or are you going to wait and be like, that's not really for me? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so let's move from something that is that just arrived to something that's going to be coming out actually the week before. Okay, and that's Elemental. Elemental, so I've only seen this trailer once. And I got to say, and that's not any fault of my own. It's the only time I've seen it when I've gone to the movies. Not that I've, you know, it's not the first thing I look up on YouTube. Let's put it that way. But when I saw it, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a cool concept, no pun intended. And I thought that Pixar did a really good job with this. Now, I need to, this is something that, you know, I will sit down and watch too. And I'm interested in, but we'll see what happens. So the reason I bring this up, okay, is because we have Jeremy, who actually was on the show yesterday, like I said, actually wrote this piece about box office projections. And he says that Elemental is projected to earn $40 million, okay, which ranks among Pixar's lowest. The first round of box office projections for Disney's Pixar's Elemental are not looking good. As the original title about a city of fire and water, plant and air, is being tracked at one of the worst openings for Pixar history. Currently, Elemental is projecting for a opening weekend around $40 million. And then nearly 30 years of Pixar feature films, in which include 23 that have been theatrically released, only two have earned three-day openings of less than $40 million. The first was The Good Dinosaur, and also from Elemental. Also from Elemental director Peter Song, which opened in $35 million over the 3 days over Thanksgiving weekend in 2015. The second film was Onward, which opened at $39 million in March of 2020 on the weekend just before the COVID-19 shut theaters down for a year. Since then, the only Pixar films to get a full theatrical release is last year's Toy Story spinoff Lightyear, which flopped with a $50.5 million domestic opening and a final total of $118 million and $226 million worldwide against a $200 million budget before marketing costs. Projections can change greatly in the first 3 weeks between the first round of tracking and its release. But Disney has a lot of work to do convincing audiences, especially families, to come out for Elemental. The wildly successful Universal picture, Super Mario, and even Minions, The Rise of Goku, have had the advantage of being based on established shows that families have returned to theaters. Now Disney must convince them to do the same with an original Pixar film, something that's an easy layup, that was an easy layup for families in the 2000s and early 2010s. Having stronger reviews than Lightyear would certainly be a good place to start. Disney is hoping to get that by screening Elemental on the final day of the Cannes Film Festival. Of course, there's a chance that this could backfire and get mixed reviews, like Lucasfilm's Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny got from Cannes critics last week. But a strong reception could be the start of at least Elemental getting on the radar of some sort of audience, adult audiences, particularly parents. But beyond that, Disney must get families interested in seeing these movies on the big screen after the pandemic, offering well-received Pixar titles such as Soul, Luca, and Turning Red as Disney exclusives. Such a focus on streaming was done under the directive of former CEO Bob Chapek, but studios insiders say that Chapek's departure and the return of Iger has led to a renewed focus on theatrical with longer windows for such animated titles as Elemental and Disney's Animation's 100th anniversary film Wish, which is due out Thanksgiving weekend. So let's talk about this because we actually touched on Wish the other day, and he brought up the same thing that he was bringing up in this piece, is that it's got to have a really, really strong opening weekend. Now, I saw Lightyear when it first came out, okay? And I didn't mind it. I'm not saying I loved it. I did, you know, there were a lot of criticisms, I think, but I liked it. I liked it. It was fun. You know, I think there were problems with it, okay? For example, I don't know why Tim Allen didn't come back and do, you know, the voice for Lightyear. To me, when you have a character, okay, when you, it doesn't matter if it's an animated character or a live action character, when you have a character come back after a long period of time, people remember that particular person, okay? I mean, unless they're wearing a mask like, you know, Michael Myers or Jason or somebody else. But that being said, when you have a character such as a Buzz Lightyear, such as somebody else, I'm going to take Freddy Krueger, even though he had makeup on. People remember Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger, okay? Or, you know, I mean, even take Han Solo. People love Harrison Ford as Han Solo. That's, I'm not saying that's why Solo busted, but the fact that you had a younger Han Solo didn't work. That being said, when you have a character like a Lightyear, okay, I think the fact that he did not come back and play the character was a big, big thing. And even the opening, the first minute of it, when he said, this is based on the story of the Space Ranger Lightyear. So we're not getting Andy. We're not getting any of the other toys. We're not getting anyone. And I think that a standalone film like that is very difficult to do, especially when you have such a beloved character like that. Now, let's talk about the box office real quick, because that is one of the things where $40 million, that's tough, okay? That's very, now, I will, truth be told, okay, Lightyear, I think, while it wasn't that good of a movie, it really had the pandemic too. Okay, it opened a week before that, or, you know, right around, and that really hurt its earnings. I mean, when you only earn $226 million against a $200 million budget, that's really hard. They need a win. Pixar really, really needs a win. I would even go so far as to say this. I think that this could be a prelude to what we see for Wish in November. And it's a completely different story. We don't know what the story is yet and everything else. But if this doesn't perform well, okay, and mind you, you're going to have a ton of stuff. There's a lot of reasons why this might not perform well, okay? Number one, you're going to have a lot of other things out, okay? I mean, Guardians will have been out for a month, okay? You know, Fast X is still going to be there, and we've got a story about that coming up in a couple minutes, okay? You've got, you know, Transformers, you've got Across the Spider-Verse, and we have a story about that coming up. Stay tuned. But that being said, it's one of those things where you're going to have a lot of stuff out. And you're going to have to, you know, with families and everything else, they're going to have to really pick and choose. I hope this does well. I really do, because I think that it's one of those things that it could do numbers. It could do numbers. If this gets... They have to figure out if they want to roll the dice or not and put this a chance. Because if it does, and it does well, I mean, we've seen both sides of the coin, right? We've seen Indiana Jones have over a $300 million budget and lukewarm reviews. That's really going to hurt opening weekend. I mean, look, it's still going to make $100 million. It's still going to do a lot of money. But it's not going to make as much money as it could. So it's going to have to rely on the overseas market, just like a Fast X. That being said, I think it will do well. I mean, I hope it does well. I'm going to go see it. I'm not going to cover it here as a spoiler cast on the channel. However, I am going to go see it because I'm fascinated in the concept. So, but $40 million, if this, you know, anything is going to be better than One Late. I think if I had to put a prediction, two things. Number one, it's going to make more worldwide than, you know, Lightyear at 226. And number two, it's going to make more domestically than Lightyear. Now, I don't know how much it's going to make, you know, overseas, everything else, but I would say this. So we have one of our viewers here, Kevin, Indiana Jones, Dial Destiny, prediction $200 to $250 million debut. I don't know about that. I gotta be honest, Kevin. I don't know about that. Because, well, I mean, look, that, yeah. Okay. Think about this. Okay. Okay. 50 to 60. Okay. So I just was talking with Jeremy the other day. And as a matter of fact, he wrote this piece and he said 40. If it makes 50 to 60 opening weekend, that's really good. That's actually over expectation. So let's hope that that makes 50 to 60. Okay. But I think a couple of things, as I was just talking about. Number one, you're going to have a lot of other stuff out. Okay. You're going to have a lot of other stuff out. And I don't know if that's going to hurt it. Number two, you got to look at who's going to go see this. And that's families and parents and everything else. And number three, you're only as good as your last thing. And their last thing was Lightyear. So, and he says, Little Mermaid domestic. Actually, we're going to do a story in a couple of minutes. And you're about right. You're about right. So let's, but yeah, so that is Elemental. I think it's going to do. I hope it does well. So what do you guys think, though? What do you guys think about the predictions for Elemental? Do you think that they are right on track? Or do you think that it's going to be like Kevin and it's going to be more like $50 or $60 million? Leave me your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so Kevin was just talking about this making possibly $130 to $150 million. And he's not wrong. Little Mermaid is one of these pictures that, you know, which is actually previewed last night. It looks, I'm not going to go see it personally, but it looks like it's going to make a whole lot of money. And so this comes from the THR, and it says, The Little Mermaid to swim to $120 million Memorial Day opening. The Little Mermaid is expected to swim to $120 million in its four-day domestic box office debut, making one of the better Memorial Day weekend openings and marking the first 2023 summer tentpole targeting females. Overall, the movie is tracking for an $80 million opening through Sunday. Rob Marshall directs the live-action version remake of Disney's beloved animated film. The classic tale stars Haley Berry as Ariel, the spirited young mermaid who makes a dangerous deal with the evil sea witch Ursula, played by Melissa McCarthy, in order to experience life on land and meet the dashing Prince Eric. However, the pact poses great risk to her father's fathery kingdom. The cast also includes David Diggs, Awkwafina, Javier Bardem, Jacob Tremblay, and Ara Malek. Bailey's performance as Ariel has drawn praise from critics and a racist backlash from social media commentators protesting the casting of a black actress in the title role. Disney insiders don't expect these protests to hurt the film in North America, but are willing to see how the movie plays in certain overseas markets. If it indeed does do $120 million, Little Mermaid would be the fifth biggest domestic star for Memorial Day weekend, a ranking currently occupied by Disney's live-action Aladdin, which opened to 116.8 over the four-day holiday. The Little Mermaid's four-day haul expected to include a three-day gross of $100 million. Pre-sales are pacing very well ahead of Aladdin, but behind fellow live-action remakes of Beauty and the Beast and The Lion King. Interest is being driven by girls, moms, and other females, similar to Beauty and the Beast, whose audience was 70% female. The movie features a score by multiple Oscar winner Alan Menken, as well as new songs by Lin-Manuel Miranda. Action comedy The Machine and Robert De Niro, comedy About My Father, also nationwide, are not expected to clear more than $5 to $6 million in their domestic debuts. The Machine from Screen Gems stars Burke Kensley and is inspired by the comedian stand-up act of the same name, and Mark Hamill co-stars. Okay, let's talk about this, because I think that this is going to be, Disney is and has been, okay, has been really raking in the cash for like the last, I would say, 7 to 8 years, okay? Ever since they started to do live action, if you will, okay? Whether it's Beauty and the Beast, whether it is Aladdin, which, by the way, I fell asleep during Aladdin. It's not because it was a bad movie. I'll just take the animated over the live action any day. But you have Aladdin. I love Naomi Scott, though. Love her, love her, love her. And then, of course, you have, you know, The Lion King, which grossed over $1 billion. So this is one of those movies in which I think it's going to be huge. And I think that Disney is going to have another hit here. Now, is it going to make $1 billion? Probably not. I mean, I would guess, you know, if we're looking at 130 to 150 million, it's probably going to make $700, $800 million, which is still a nice haul for that. Okay, let's call a spade a spade. That's a great haul for that movie. Okay, and the reason why I say it's going to have to, all of these movies are going to have to be very front loaded because you have so much competition, especially in June. But yeah, I think, and the fact that, you know, anybody wants to come out and say what they want, look, you're always going to have people that are going to protest this. Okay. And what I would say is it doesn't matter what you say to them and saying, let them act. Okay. It's one of those things where, you know, you're always going to have your people that are going to object about this. And I, like the piece says, I don't think the objections are going to really skew any of the hate, for lack of a better word. I mean, and that's what it is. It's hate. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I think that it's going to be, it's going to make a lot of money. Let's not kid ourselves here. It's going to make a lot of money. So that being said, I don't think there's any problem with it. So, but anyways, what do you guys think about The Little Mermaid? Are you excited for this remake? Or are you somebody that's on the fence about it? Are you going to go see this? Would you take your daughter to go see this? What did you think about, would, after you go see it, I'd like you to come back and say, which would you prefer, the remake, the live action remake, or the animated one? Leave me your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so we will do this one next, because you were talking about this, Kevin, and I want to, okay, hold on just a second. I got to put all this stuff in there. Okay, so you were talking about let's move on to our next story. So you were actually talking about this. Sony Pictures Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse Part 2, which is the one you were referring to. Domestic box office, 68. I think it might be more than that, Kevin. I mean, the way the first reactions are coming out right now, this is going to be an absolutely huge movie. This is going to be really the start of blockbuster season. I mean, May is, but I mean, we're going to be in full swing. But so here is the first reactions are out. Okay. And I'm going to talk to you. This is from The Wrap. And so this is what the piece says. The first public screenings of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse was held Wednesday night, which means we're now seeing the first public reactions to the film. And in case you had any doubts, praise the animation for the animated film. The first sequel to the 2018 Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse was effusive. Just shy, in fact, of universally acclaimed by the people who saw it. One step above masterpiece, it's an actual work of art, wrote Sean O'Connell of Cinema Blend. Real Blend co-host James Hamilton says, quote, it's darker, more powerful, and better in every way, end quote, than its predecessor. The Wrap's Drew Taylor called it a stunning achievement and visually dazzling, but added, the movie's real superpower is emotional depth and its beautiful, melancholy tone. And Stephen Wilbersen of Collider said he wanted to push pause about 100 times to study the incredible artistic on display. The only dissenter who saw it was Ezra Baum, editor-in-chief for the Week Media, who dinged the film because it prioritizes fan service over a strong story. It truly feels like the first entry into a two-part story and gets predictable in the end. Across the Spider-Verse is directed by Joaquin Haas Dos Santos, Justin K. Thomas, and Soul co-creator Kemp Powers, and written by David Callahan, and Christopher Miller, and Phil Lord, who will also produce. It stars Shermaine Moore as Miles Morales, Hailee Steinfeld as Gwen Stacy, the Gwen Stacy version, Jake Johnson as Peter B. Parker, all will return from the first film, and coming in is Brian Therese Henry as Jefferson Davis, and Luna Laura Valdez as Rio Morales, his parents. So here are a couple of the reactions here that I wanted to read to you guys, because I think this is a necessary thing. So here are a few reactions. This comes from Mike Ryan. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is not surprisingly terrific. It's a bigger story, spread over this movie and the next, but it's still about Miles, just wanting to be accepted for who he is. There are a lot of spider people in this movie. I laughed out loud eight times. This is the Sean O'Connell piece. Okay, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse lives one step above masterpiece. It's an actual work of art. Every frame deserves to be hung in a museum. The jokes and nods to Spidey lore are perfect. It's outstanding. The best Spider-Man movie. Might be my favorite movie ever. Cherish it. This comes from Brian Davies. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is yet another resounding win for the Lord Miller-produced universe. Hailee Steinfeld really comes into her own as Gwen Stacy, and her scenes with Shea Whigham's Captain Stacy are truly special. It's darker and sadder than I expected, but necessary. I mean, and these go on and on and on. I mean, here's another one from Jake Hamilton. The moment Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse ended, I knew I had experienced a cinematic moment. I cherish this forever. If Into, or this film, is A New Hope, okay, then this is Empire. Darker, more powerful, and better in any way. It's going to be a long wait until March 2024. How does this movie exist? I mean, they go on and on and on and on. So I think that being said, I think this is going to be huge. This is going to be absolutely huge. And I think that this is going to do a lot of money. I've got to see the first installment myself. I can watch it on demand anytime I want, but I will be going to see this prior to the opening, and it's next week. It's next week, guys. That's how fast we're getting to this. I can't. This is going to be so good. And anybody I've spoken to, okay, in film circles, when we talk about Spider-Man, and you know. I mean, there are so many Spider-Man movies out there, right? They always put this, the first film, Across, in their top three. Every single time. It might be this first Spider-Man from Sam Raimi. It's going to be, you know, maybe Spider-Man 2. But this is in there. This is in there. So it's definitely going to be a fun ride. I can't wait to see this. And it's going to be a blast. What do you guys think, though? Are you excited to see Into the Spider-Verse? Are you going to wait to actually for everything to die down? What are your favorite Spider-Man movies? What are your favorite Spider-Man movies? Are you going to go see this opening weekend? Leave me your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay. So we got a couple more stories left. And just bear with me, guys. I have to get rid of the slides. So as everybody knows, okay, as everybody knows, HBO Max just originally turned into, so Dad says here, I'm excited to see Spider-Verse because I want to see if the rumors are true. What rumors are those? I haven't heard about any rumors. No, I don't, if there are spoilers, I don't want you to tell me. DM me. If there's spoilers, Dad, DM me this. DM me. I don't want to spoil the movie for anybody. So I would say that. DM me on Twitter about it. So anyways, so as everybody knows, in the past, I would say week or week and a half, there has been a change in one of the major streaming services. And so HBO Max just went to Max. Okay, this was a big to-do because, number one, I mean, this goes all the way back to the original beginning of the streaming service, right? And how they were doing it. And then, you know, months and months later, they took off all these titles and then they said, okay, we're going to, you know, do this. And then they get investigated by the DOJ about the merger. And there's just been a disaster. Anyways, the first day of Max was a couple of days ago, yesterday, I think. And I understand, so you have a lot of bugs, okay? So what Max did, okay, was that they did a very, and I'm going to take my picture off here so you guys can see this. So what they did was they did something very unprofessional, a lot of people's mind. And I agree with them, by the way, okay? So as you can see there, okay, and this, I believe, is for, so we'll just call it what it is, okay? We'll just call it, let's say it's, you know, this is for Raging Bull, let's say. Okay, well, anyways, whatever the movie is, okay? What they did, as you can plainly see, is they put everybody into one group. So you have Peter Savage, Martin Scorsese, you know, Jake LaMotta. This is actually Raging Bull, and I thought it was, okay? So this is actually Raging Bull, okay? Because Jake LaMotta, of course, was the boxer back in the 80s. Okay, so, and he was one of the creative consultants on it. Anyways, what ended up happening was they lumped everybody together. So Scorsese actually directed it, obviously. LaMotta was a EP on it. And so people got very, all these creatives got very, very upset. And look, I don't blame them. I don't blame them whatsoever because you're not just a creator. You're a producer or you're a director or whatever it is. Okay? And subsequently, what ends up happening is that you're not getting the due credit, okay, on there. So the reason I bring this up is because Variety, so this happened a couple days ago. So Max then came out the other day and said they will change the film credit listings to break out of directors and writers over the backlash of the heading of what I just showed you with creators. Warner Brothers Discovery newly launched Max lumped film directors and writers under a single creative heading, a change that prompted a backlash from filmmakers and Hollywood directors and writers' guilds. Now the company says it's reverting the list back to how they were presented on HBO Max, blaming the issue on a technical, quote, oversight. Right. We agree that the talent behind the content on Max deserves the work to be properly recognized, a Max spokesperson said in a statement to Variety. We will correct the credits, which we altered due to an oversight in the technical transition from HBO Max to Max, and we apologize for the mistake. Max's move to consolidate writers, directors, and other creatives under the single creatives listing drew anger amongst the outgoing Writers of America strike. As the union sees to reach a new contract with the major studios through the Alliance of Motion Pictures and Television Producers. The Max change was called out in a widely viewed tweet Tuesday night by John Frankenstein, who wrote, "The HBO Max, or Max, has eliminated writer-director credits in its interface in favor of a vague creatives." Okay, so this posting that you're seeing there is one of Raging Bull. He says, "It's so fucking over." So, look. Currently, Max details the page for Raging Bull displays this listing as everybody you see there. Previously, the HBO Max listing for Raging Bull and other films had distinguished between directors and writers. IMDb listing noted that Raging Bull is directed by Scorsese and separate lists for writing credit and so on. An absolute masterclass in how to fuck up a streaming service. This will be studied for years, commented Steve Knight, whose credit includes this television series Daredevil and Spartacus. In a jointly released statement issued Wednesday, before WB said it would change the film credits listing on Max, the president of the Directors Guild of America and WG West slammed the quote, unilateral decision by Warner Brothers to change the longstanding individual credits of directors and writers in the new rollout of Max, end quote. WGA West President Meredith Stein said, Warner Brothers has lumped writers, directors, and producers in an inventive diminishing category they call creators. This is a credits violation for starters, but worse, it is disrespectful and insulting to the artists that make the films and television shows that make their corporation billions. She added, this attempt to diminish writers' contributions and importance echoes the message we heard in our negotiations with the AMPTP, that writers are marginal, inessential, and should be given and should simply accept being paid less and less while our employers' profits go higher and higher. This tone-deaf disregard for writers' importance is what brought us here today, day 22 of the strike. For almost 90 years, the Directors Guild has fought fiercely to protect the credit and recognition deserved by one directors, the work they create, said WGA president. The Warner Brothers Discovery unilaterally moved without notice or consultation to collapse directors, writers, producers, and others into a generic category of creators into their new Max rollout while we were in negotiations with them is a grave insult to our members and our union. Okay, so there's a little bit more here. Meanwhile, Max does not list such credit for television series, and HBO Max didn't either. Max launched in the United States on Tuesday with what appears to be only minor technical issues. Then 2 days come before Warner Brothers chief David Zaslav was booed during his commencements at Boston University with the crowd heckling the CEO, pay your writers. The newly revamped Max service launched with 35,000 plus hours of programming, more than double than what was on HBO Max, largely thanks to hundreds of shows being added from the Discovery side of the house. According to the company, a large portion of HBO Max subscribers should have their apps automatically updated to Max, with their plan information and preferences migrated into the new app. However, in many cases, users need to download the new Max app. Okay, let's talk about this. First of all, this shouldn't have even happened. I'm going to just be outright blunt, okay? I'm just going to be outright blunt about this, okay? This kind of thing, and I'm not going to repeat, the statement was perfectly written, okay? This is an insult, okay? You have a guy in Martin Scorsese, okay, that has been making cinema for the past 45, 50 years. I mean, go back all the way to Taxi Driver, 1976, okay? So 60 years. The fact is that this is just, whether it is an oversight, and look, I will give them the benefit of the doubt to a certain extent, okay? But once again, this just doesn't look good. Because here's the thing, okay? At the end of the day, number one, you're in a writer's strike right now, okay? Number two, HBO Max or however you want to call, whatever you want to call them, okay, has pulled stunts like this before. Not this particular stunt, but when they went day and date with everything a couple years ago, they undercut all of the creatives, okay? All of the creative, whether it was Legendary, whether it was, you know, Denis Villeneuve, whether it was whoever it was, they undercut all of them, okay? Now, they were bright enough to pay Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot their bonuses right when the whole pandemic began. That's about the one thing they have been able to say they've done well. But this kind of thing, you've had months or at least 6 weeks to pull this off. And this is what you come out with as it being a, quote, oversight? I don't understand that. It doesn't look good at all. And if it is an oversight, then it needs to get corrected very quickly. And if it isn't an oversight, what the hell are you doing? All of that being said, look, and I would be curious. So they said they would change it. I haven't gone on to look as of yet. My guess is it is changed. But it's just one of those things where the fact that it was even done to begin with, that's the key thing. If we weren't in a writer's strike right now, okay, and this happened, there wouldn't be that much of a upswing about it. an uptick about it. But because we are, it's magnified. And they can turn around and say, okay, we'll get it corrected in 24 hours, blah, 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 blah. Because there's a lot of stuff. Technical oversight, no problem. But when you're putting, you know, rubbing salt on the wound, it's like, it just doesn't look good. Anyways, what do you guys think about the oversight of this? Or is it an oversight? Do you think HBO Max, or Max as they're now called, do you think Max deliberately did this? And if so, do you think they wanted to do this? Or do you think it was just, would you give them the benefit of the doubt? I guess my question is to you guys. Leave your thoughts down in the comments, and I will get back to everybody. Okay, so Dad says it's not changed yet. It's still lumped together. So that's interesting. That's interesting. So I wouldn't be shocked. Now, to be fair, okay, if that's true, so this happened on Tuesday. Today's Thursday, okay? I give them by Monday because there was a lot of stuff there, right? There was a lot of stuff that they're, you know, there's a lot of moving parts there. I would say I would give them by Monday. If nothing is done by Monday, then I would be very, very pissed off. I mean, I can imagine they're already kicked off, but I would be even more agitated, okay? And so then at that point, you might see individuals start to come out, okay, and say something. So that's an interesting little nugget there. Okay, so I have one more fun little story for you guys I thought we'd end today with, because this is, we always talk about these things in movies. And so I'm going to just get the pictures up here right now. Okay, last one, guys. Okay, so we all talk about cinema and props. Props obviously are important things to cinema. They're, you know, guns. They are the pieces of paper. They are the books, whatever they are. Okay. So anyways, some of these props are actually going to be getting auctioned off. Okay. And one of them, okay, is the actual dress that Carrie Fisher wore during the last scene of Star Wars. So pictured there on the left also is the mask that Chris Pratt wore in Guardians of the Galaxy. So this comes from the THR and basically says that all this stuff is going to be up for, and a couple other things I'll talk to you about are going to be up for sale in this prop sale. Carrie Fisher's dress from the original Star Wars film, the hammer that was used in the rock hammer used in Shawshank Redemption, okay? And the coolest one out of it, Batpod, used by Christian Bale in The Dark Knight, okay, is all going to be auctioned off in June, okay? And the largest memorabilia in the world. The Star Wars dress is a holy grail for collectors. So this is a holy grail for collectors. And the Batpod alone is estimated to fetch up to $2 million. So this is going to get around $2 million. Being run by Prop Store, the 25-year-old company that specializes in cinematic treasures and collectibles. Over 1,400 items will be sold over 3 days from June 28th to June 30th in Los Angeles. The first day will feature in-room bidding open to the public at the Peterson's Automotive Museum. Online telephone bids can be placed across the whole event. Nothing the auction is offering up is more likely to be than the dress that you ceremonial dress, okay, which is screen matched to determine its authenticity. Designed by costume designer John Mallow, who earned an Academy Award for his work on Star Wars, this gown was used by Fisher for the film's final scene when Leia is bestowing Luke Skywalker and Han Solo with the medals. Adding to the aura of the auction idols, this is believed to be the only layered costume still known in existence from the original film. Ceremonial gown with its lower cut neckline and unique integral sleeve drapery was also used for the basis for Leia's look in several of the Star Wars posters. And Fisher was photographed by was shot by photographer David Steen for numerous publicity photos in the dress. Made from a cream, lightweight silk fabric, the costume features a hidden zipper along the side as well as a hook and eye fastener along the white shoulder. The Batpod, okay, this one here is being displayed, is being offered as one of the six made for the production of The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises, with the vehicles largely driven by a stunt driver during filming. They were also used for numerous events in the promotion of the movie. This one has spent the last several years stored at the Peterson's Automotive Museum in Los Angeles. It was featured prominently in the Hollywood's Dream Machine exhibit since 2019 in the museum's private vault for VIP tours. Among the highlights are a custom-made chassis with 31-inch racing tires and a Honda 750 engine, as well as two plastic, resin, and fiberglass cannons that have been secured to the front of the vehicle. Don't think you can just drive off the auction floor with this one, however. It's being sold in a non-functional, quote, rolling-only condition, with the battery, fuel tank, and throttle controls have been removed. But it does come supplied with a metal support and stand for display purposes. With Guardians of the Galaxy being hailed as one of the greatest films in the MCU and story trilogy, the interest for the light-up Star-Lord helmet from the franchise first installment was released in 2014. The headgear is described as a foam and sweat padded two-piece urethane resin helmet that is handcrafted with a variety of different finishes to resemble metal. Inset with two-tone red on the exterior and blue on the interior, lenses and applied with a grid pattern acrylic sheets on the front as well as the small segments of metal tubing screws and mesh throughout. The pieces are secured together with powerful magnets that are concealed on the inside. Per the item description, it is labeled with stickers marked Hero 3 and 3. The helmet's interior also conceals a 9-volt battery switch, which illuminates LED inside of the lenses, and a red LED light on the right when flicked. It is intentionally lightly distressed to appear well-worn with the scuffs and scratches throughout, and a tongue piece designed to be concealed with the helmet pieces that are broken off onto one side. The item is expected to fetch anywhere between $100,000 to $200,000, so bring your wallets. So they're going to be having a couple of other pieces, okay, from Field of Dreams to Thor Love and Thunder to whatever. But there's a couple of other things here. They're going to have the sinking coat by Kate Winslet that she wore in Titanic, estimated for $100,000 to $200,000. One of Harrison Ford's costumes for Blade Runner, which could go as anywhere from between $80,000 to $160,000. And as I made previously mentioned, the Rock Hammer is expected to go between $50,000 to $100,000. But there's another little noted thing that I think would be very cool, though. This, okay, is the actual script from Brian De Palma, and I'm going to see if I can't get my picture off here. There we go. This is the actual thing that Al Pacino used. This is the actual script that Brian De Palma had actually given Al Pacino to use. And, of course, you can see it says Scarface on the front, and it has been done for authenticity, so that's important, too. But this is going to fetch, I believe, here we go. So it's going to fetch anywhere between, from what I understand, $50,000 to $100,000, which I think is incredible. So if you guys like movies, okay, and you have the money, go for it. I mean, these are all collector's items. These are all, I mean, like I said, I like to end on that, but these are all collector's items, whether you're talking about the gown from 1977 and the Star-Lord mask. I mean, Shawshank Redemption is a classic film. It was up for Best Picture in 1994. You've got the Batpod, okay? I mean, it's stripped down, but it's still 31-inch tires. You've got the whole thing. It's pretty cool. And then finally, the Scarface script. That's the actual script that Al Pacino used that 40 years ago. So anyways, what do you guys think about all that? If you had the money, Which one of these four items would you get, or five items would you get? Would you get the mask? Would you get the gown? Would you get the rock hammer, the bat pod, or the script? Leave me your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. So as we end the show, Hope, wow, Back to the Future script. Wow, that's awesome. That's fantastic. I would definitely do that. Metal says, if I can't shoot the guns, I don't want it. Yeah, right? I'd get the rock hammer and the Star-Lord mask. Yeah. I mean, yeah, the rock hammer is cool. And by the way, that was only one of four. So that has to be said, too. These were all props and originals, but that's only one of four. So when you talk about authenticity and few limited things, that's the one to really get thing on. But the Batpod is pretty cool. And by the way, I think you're right. I mean, stripped down, it's kind of mundane. I remember, this is going to date me, but I remember 1989 when Batman was first being released. And MTV, because they were doing all this press for it, they gave away, the mask looks absolutely amazing, actually. Yeah, no, the mask, this looks pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. The mask looks unbelievably cool. So I totally agree with you. The scuffs and the authenticity and how it works and everything else, definitely. But getting back to the Batman, so they had in 1989, okay, they actually had, because MTV was doing a lot of press for it and whatever else, they actually gave away, I think it was only one of two or three, they actually gave away, and it was a contest, you couldn't buy it. But they gave away the Batmobile, and it was street legal. So, I mean, you can imagine, like, somebody rolling up, you know, doing 120 down a strip in the Batmobile. A couple of years ago, I was on a bus, and I actually saw a DeLorean on the road. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, you're driving that? I mean, of course, DeLorean is what you were talking about, Back to the Future. It's one of those cherished cars, right? Never really went far anyways as far as an automotive company, but nonetheless, it's still fun. Okay, so I thought we'd end on a fun little note there. And as a matter of fact, the auction house is right down the street from my house. Not this. I mean, this is a green screen. Okay, my room is, I live in one little thing, but it's right down from where I'm living right now. It's right down the street. So I might. I don't know if I will or not. Try and give him a call and see if I can't, you know, go in and take some pictures of the stuff. So that, because it's one thing to actually see the pictures. It's another to actually get real life photographs of the pictures, right? So we'll see if that happens though. Dad says DeLoreans are cool. The new DeLorean. Oh, really? I didn't know that. That's fascinating. I will have to, I mean, I've seen Fast 10. I'm just trying to think. I think I know the scene you're talking about. I think I do. I'd have to go back and watch it again and really look for it. But I think I know the scene you're talking about. Because if I'm not mistaken, there's only one shot where really the door just slides up. Yeah, that's the new DeLorean. Interesting. Fascinating. Cypher drove it to Dom's. Okay, that's what it was. I knew I'd seen it. Okay. And that's right. That's right. Thank you. Because it's one of those things where you think you know. Okay, good. Good poll there. Good poll, Dad. Okay. So that's all we got for today. It's a couple things. Number one, go check out, and I said this earlier, we did a piece of his. Go check out Jeremy's work on the rap. Really cool stuff. I had about an hour interview with him yesterday. Great guy. Has his ear to the ground in Hollywood. You know, he was the one we were talking about everything yesterday. From, you know, box office predictions to Barbie. You know, as I was asking about Barbie, because of course, as I said, we got a new trailer today and he did that. We talked about the Flash, no spoilers, but we talked about the Flash film. We talked about the strike and how long this could go on and everything else. We touched on a lot of different topics. So go check that out. He does really good stuff there. Number two, podcasts. I know I'm a little slow, but I'm trying to get as many of these podcasts up as possible. Go check those out. Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple. That's where you're going to be able to find those. you know, you just search for that little picture there or David Steele, and it'll come right up for you. And I will be getting, I've got about a whole month to do. I've got the rest of April and all of May. Number three, and that includes, by the way, that includes a spoiler cast of like Guardians and Fast X and some other things. Number three, Mission Impossible. We are a couple, almost 6 weeks out. So I will be doing more of the Mission Impossible rewatch series. And so we're on Mission Impossible 3 right now. So, you know, by the time July 12th comes, guys, you guys will have had all of the Mission Impossibles and all the rewatches and my thoughts on all of those leading up to Dead Reckoning. Patreon. And I know I keep pushing this every single time. So tonight. So did I see the new Spider-Man? Yeah, I did. It looks amazing. It looks amazing. So I can't. So you mean into the Spider-Verse, yes? I imagine that's what you mean. I don't think, you know what? I haven't seen it, Menno. I did a story today about the first reactions. Everybody said this is going to be a masterpiece. So I will definitely check that out, do that later on, or talk about that tomorrow. So, or put a tweet out on this. Oh, the game. Now, you're talking about the game. Yeah, oh no. Yeah, I did. Yes. Yes. I have seen it. It looks awesome. I own the first one. I actually have the Game of the Year version. So I got all the DLC and everything else. No, it looks awesome. And it's interesting, too, because the way that first trailer was structured, okay, the only other trailer was structured, I should say, was, and we still don't know, right? But I think that the thing is, I thought, and I think everybody else thought, Venom was going to be the lead villain. And from what the gameplay looks unbelievable. I can't wait to see that or play that. I've seen it. But Kraven is making an appearance in this. And that's fascinating. So, yeah, no, I agree with you. It's going to be amazing. I think from what the gameplay they showed yesterday at the Sony PlayStation show, it definitely has a chance at Game of the Year. I really, 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 if, because they're not changing any of the fighting mechanics, it looks like. Okay, as a matter of fact, they're adding things to it. So you're going to have all the perks and everything else. You're also going to be able to play as both Miles and Peter Parker, or Spider-Man. The gameplay just looks out of sight. And I can't wait for that. They said, regardless of when it comes out, it's going to come out this year in the fall. It looks unbelievable. But, so the last thing I wanted to say is Patreon. So I finally got the link to it. I'm going to sit down today or tomorrow and watch Training Day. You guys are going to be getting both the Untouchables and Training Day. So there is a trial too. So that's the other thing about this. Tell your friends about this too. So once this is recorded, everything else, there's going to be I'm going to set this up. There's going to be a 7-day trial. Okay. So you guys can go in, you can watch the videos, and it's cheap enough. Okay. It's $5 a month for one video, $10 a month for both videos. Guys, it would help me out. Okay. And you're getting great content. Okay. Also, super chats, those go a long way. The store, we got Father's Day coming up in about a month. Okay. Brand new mug would be a fantastic Father's Day gift. You've got shirts there. You've got hoodies. You've got everything there. Okay. Definitely check that out. And I'm not even talking, guys, about all the shows and all the spoiler casts and everything else. And yeah, that's about it. So As I said, I'm going to try and procure some more interviews down the road, and we'll see what happens. So, okay. So that's going to do it for today. But do the three things you need to do. Be safe, be careful, and have a great rest of the day. I'm your host, David Steele, and you have been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.